Oh, I'm terribly excited. What am I going to see?
Do you know the story of Romeo and Juliet?
Sort of.
The film is The Goldwyn Follies from 1938. In it, a big-time Hollywood producer wants to maintain the common touch in his films. So he hires a wide-eyed country girl to give him feedback on his works in progress. In this scene, the film within the film is Romeo and Juliet. They're shooting a dance version of it with choreography by none other than Georges Balanchine. On the right side of the set, the Hotel Capulet. On the left, you guessed it, the Hotel Montague. The drama unfolds. It's a battle between a tap-dancing family and a ballet-dancing family. The couple dies, of course. And what is the reaction of our country girl?
Oh, I didn't know Romeo and Juliet died. I'm awfully sorry.
Well, what would you want them to do?
Why, I'd want them to get up and their parents to come in and forgive them and be married afterwards and be happy.
Mr. Murphy, I want to change the ending.
Change the ending?
I want the lovers to stand up and dance. I want the parents to come out. I want everybody dancing. I want the hearts of the world beating with love and triumph.
Sounds like a solution that's pure Hollywood. But oddly enough, this is the same idea that occurred to Sergei Prokofiev as he struggled to transform Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet into a full-scale dramatic ballet right around the same time, the late 1930s. It is now a celebrated classic, but the ending presented problems. Plenty of others had looked at this profoundly verbal piece of theater in mostly nonverbal ways. Tchaikovsky wrote a brief orchestral piece which he called a fantasy overture based on the play. By now, its love theme is used as much for satire as for romance. There were operas, which were a little more verbal, notably one by Bellini and another by Charles Gounod, and a work by Berlioz, which he called a dramatic symphony. And there had been some early ballets attempted. But the fact is, Romeo and Juliet had always been a theme in search of a composer. The composer turned out to be Prokofiev. And it took until nearly 1940 to get a full-length, credible, beautiful, and memorable Romeo and Juliet on the ballet stage. It wasn't just Prokofiev, of course. A number of things came together to make it happen. And part of it was the role of theater and dance in Russia in that period, right up to now.
All the dancers are schooled in Stanislavski. That's part of their upbringing.
Nancy Reynolds, a former dancer, writes about dance.
Baryshnikov had it, Makarova had it, the Soviet dancers that came here definitely were schooled that way. So I think there was a great thrust toward drama anyway.
So Prokofiev, too, went right for the drama. With his collaborator from the Kirov Ballet, he created a full evening's entertainment, charting the play in music, piece by piece. Michael Beckerman runs the music department at NYU.
Prokofiev had a gift for quick characterization.
He's able to set the scene right from the start, very vividly, and vary the music wildly.
There's at least 15 or 20 musical ideas in this ballet that are utterly memorable and continue to be memorable. That's why the biggest shock, perhaps, is that people didn't take to it immediately.
The first Soviet performance was in January of 1940. Prokofiev and the choreographer, Lavrovsky, had fought, and it showed. The music was edgier than expected. The dancers were unhappy. The performance was almost canceled. And the saying going around at the time was, "There is no tale of greater woe than Prokofiev's score for Romeo." As is often the case, what made it difficult is what made it great.
You never in this score get 8 bars of something straight. Just when you're prepared to take something as a relatively ordinary, straightforward phrase, there's a harmonic shift, a dissonance. Twist that makes everything a bit different. And that's the puzzle of it, how it manages to be sardonic on the one hand and passionate on the other.
After the initial shock, the ballet was a great success, even with its tragic ending. But that took some time to develop, too. Prokofiev had the idea to revise Shakespeare. There was quite a fuss, he wrote in his autobiography, about our attempts to give Romeo and Juliet a happy ending. In the last act, Romeo arrived a minute earlier, found Juliet alive, and everything ends well. The reasons for this bit of barbarism were purely choreographic, he continued. Living people can dance, the dying cannot. But he came around in the end and found a way to write a proper tragic ending.
These days, the choreographer can do anything. I think one of them has been set in, I don't know, sort of like an East German prison camp. You know, I mean, dying, what's that? You can do anything you want. I think in the Diaghilev version, they escaped in an airplane. So, you know.
We've had plenty of interpretations, dueling, feuding interpretations of Romeo and Juliet. Norma Shearer in 1936.
Oh, Romeo. Romeo. Wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Zeffirelli's 1968 version.
Wherefore art thou, Romeo? Deny thy father and refuse thy name.
An animated version.
You're Capulet. And you're Montague.
A hip, contemporary, urban version.
A dog of the house of Capulet moves me!
And a million others.
When you're a jet all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. When you're a jet, if the spit hits...
But there's only one ballet to talk about. And that's the one with the spectacular score that has replaced all others. The one that dared to take a brilliant verbal drama, scene by scene, and make it into a dance. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkoe.